Sangian, though, that I found out later that day about the Washington film critics, and I think it was the next day or later that night that you had also, your film had also won the San Francisco Film Critics Award for Best Foreign Film. Is that true?
It's great. No, and I learned today about the Broadcast Film Critics awarding it too. I'm very, very happy because, I mean, when you work that hard on a movie and you essentially drop off the face of the earth for almost a little over 2 years, you know?
Yeah,
it's great to see it working out, you know?
Did you feel that Pan's Labyrinth was a more arduous effort for you than Hellboy, or just...
Funny enough, Hellboy was just as difficult to put get off the ground. It was about six years to get it off the ground, and about 8 years from beginning to beginning of the process to the end. But the only film where that has been easy to get off the ground in the six films I've done is actually Blade.
Right.
You know, which was sort of it was almost like a moving train, and you either hopped in or didn't. You know.
Sure. Right.
But it's the only instance. Every movie seems to prove arduous in some way. But Pan's Labyrinth, I would say, is one of the hardest to put together and to get all the way to the end, because it was a moderately expensive film, $13.5 million, which is almost $20 million, and raising the money to make a movie of that size was difficult than keeping your independence, you know.
Yeah, sure. Did you, was this the movie, Guillermo, that you sunk some of your own money in, or was that for Hellboy? I've forgotten the story now. Didn't you sink some of your own salary in on something? So, I'm forgetting.
Well, even at the start of the process in Pan's Labyrinth, Alfonso Cuarón and I financed part of the pre-production. Then that money we did get back.
Okay.
In production, but then at the end of production, all the producers and myself as producer-director, we gave back our salaries.
I see.
Every producer listed in there gave back their salary, and myself gave back my salary as director too, because we were approaching Cannes, and we were definitely short on budget, and rather than cut the movie down or take out stuff that I thought was needed, we all decided we would give our salaries back.
Well, that was, I presume, Guillermo, with the understanding, or wish, or at least, that you guys will be compensated later on down the road when the movie starts to do all the business that we all hope it will do, right?
Well, funny enough, Jeff, I don't think so, because we didn't give that money in any sort of advantageous terms.
Okay.
We just gave it away. But I think that as altruistic as this sounds, I think that the movie is compensating me much more in terms of satisfaction, and in this instance is absolutely true.
Uh-huh.
I really think that it's a movie that I'd much rather not see. I much rather not reap economical benefits, even if it does very well, but keep the control of it, than to have made a lot of money and then have a movie that I was not happy with. So, you know, you hear about these things now and then, but most of the times you hear directors put their own money back, but if you read a little more carefully, you find out, you put your money in, but you got a huge chunk of the back end.
Uh-huh, yeah.
In this instance, that's not the case, unfortunately for me.
I think it's so interesting that very same drawing book, that very very valuable book that you carry around, which all your drawings and your notations for your forthcoming films, in which you showed me at Cannes last May, which had some wonderfully vivid drawings that were manifested actually pretty closely in the film itself of the
yeah.
you know It was really, really, and you lost that book, was it in London or something? When did that happen? How long ago after we...
Yeah, the first book I lost in London, this is the second book, which I carry with me. Precisely, I stopped carrying the first book because I lost it. I have lost it two times. and I said, well, I'm gonna stop. No, I've lost it. But the reality of that book is, if it ever gets lost, I'll be really sad, but I'll be really curious of what the person that finds it thinks.
I think it's comforting to me, Guillermo, because I have lost things in my life, and I think it's because I'm not in your realm, but I think that all people who are in any kind of creative undertaking are daydreamers, and they forget about these things from time to time. And you just have to...
You put that, for some reason, it is in human nature to put in danger that which is most precious to you.
I was really delighted, by the way, that Sergi Lopez won an acting award from one of the critics groups, I believe. Isn't that correct? Didn't I hear about that last weekend?
Pants Robbins, he was the runner up for best supporting actor on the LA Film Critic Awards.
Okay.
I think, no amount of, if this guy wins any awards, it will be well deserved. This guy is an incredibly intelligent actor and an incredibly magnetic star, frankly. I think that he is the, if a movie is to be measured in darks and light, he is the darkest spectrum in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's the same way that the lightest spectrum in the movie is the girl. Both are very hard roles to carry as an actor.
Yeah.
They're very, very difficult, and which carries his role with elegance, very commanding presence, and he makes the guy at the same time very attractive and very repulsive, you know?
I completely believed in his coldness and his cruelty, and I didn't see him as a cardboard villain, though. I believed in him all the way through to the bottom. That's what I was so taken with. He's a monster, but I believed him in human terms as that. So it was very, very...
The way I see it, when you go through the writing manuals, and certainly when you go through the development process in Hollywood, I think that you can have a tendency to artificially try and contrast your character.
Right.
I think that you can nuance a character, but keep him in the dark side of the spectrum. The characters in Pan's Labyrinth are types. You know, they are types of characters, in the way that every fairy tale needs to have a Little Red Riding Hood and needs to have a Big Bad Wolf. But, if you watch the movie again, Sergio Lopez has contradictory moments within that darkness. I mean, he's a guy that is weak enough to lie about his father's watch existing. He hates himself enough to sort of slit his throat in the mirror, and he sees his own reflection. And he has a very beautiful moment, what I consider a really beautiful moment towards the end of the film, when he gives out his infant son to the rebels, and he says, "My son," and he has a very moving scene, but right then and there. I think that I am not one to nuance a fascist topic. I apologize for that. But I'm not going to nuance fakely a fascist captain of an era that required only the most brutal repression to occur, these guys were up in the mountains summarily executing people by the roadside. And, frankly, I'm not gonna have him tearing up while he listens to Chopin or something, you know?
I'd like to mention briefly your director of photography, who's...
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Could you please repeat his name? Because I've forgotten. I'm sorry. It's just...
Guillermo Navarro.
Okay. He also was a award winner, I believe, this last weekend, was he not?
Yeah, he actually has won 3 awards, I think. He won the Kamery Masz Award in the Poland Cinematographers Festival, mm-hmm. which is a really difficult award to win by any American cinematographer. He is a member of the ASC, and I think that only 3 or 4 members of the ASC have won that award in the history of that festival. And he also won a couple of critics' awards locally in America. Mm-hmm. And I think they are all well-deserved. I think that we have as close a collaboration as Alejandro has with Rodrigo Prieto, or Alfonso has with Chivo.
Yeah, Chivo. Magnificent Chivo, man. I think that... I was just reading, by the way, a review by a Brazilian critic. I don't know if you know him. His name is Pablo Vilaca. You know him from Rio de Janeiro?
I couldn't hear you, Jeff. I apologize.
There's a...
I hear a siren.
I'm sorry. It's the police here. Hold on. His name is Pablo Vilaca. He's from Rio de Janeiro. Are you able to hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay. Anyway, I was just digressing by saying that he, along with me, is a huge fan of Children of Men. I just read a very good piece about that.
I love that movie very much, and I think Alfonso and I were talking about. How much we believe that there is a difference between screenplay and screenwriting, mm. and we think that there's so much screenwriting on Children of Men that is done not only by the camera and the light and the colors and the shapes and all that, mm. but also in the nuance of the way you execute the very film. I mean, I think Alfonso's decision to execute most of the film from the point of view only, from the point of view of Theo, mm-hmm. the character that plays, what's his name?
Clive Owen.
Yeah, Clive Owen, or the fact that he is deciding to execute the film in a medium shot, mm-hmm. and with absolutely astounding, continuous reality feel, camera work, in which is ultimately an intricately artificial and intricately reproduced reality. I think that's screenwriting for me. That is nuancing the story as much as a page of Courier 12 screenplay writing, you know? Mm. And I believe that the same is true for Alejandro's Japanese episode on Babel, you know? Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in this, we collaborate intimately, all of us, with our DP, you know?
Yeah.
We that's why you can see the work of Chivo in other films, or the work of Guillermo Navarro in other films, and it doesn't have the same rapport than when Chivo is working with Alfonso, or Rodrigo is working with Alejandro. There's a specificity to the collaboration that I think we are all coming, at age 40, we're all coming to enjoy more and more.
You know, there is the scenes that are shot in the forest near the, you know, the light that is throughout your film, I think is the most beautiful forest light. And there's a quality to what I'm trying to express here. Forest light is, of course, a lot of shade, but not a darkened shade, but just a kind of a muted shade. And yet colors are very rich, and yet at the same time, nothing is too bright. It reminded me, frankly, of Vittorio Storaro's work in The Conformist. You know, remember the scene in the forest? It had that same feeling, you know?
I do. In my mind, the greatest forest scenes are either in Kurosawa, The Conformist, mm. or for that matter, Franklin Miller's Crossing.
You know? Oh, yeah, exactly, right. Another good
movie. I think that the Coens did such a fantastic job in that movie, mm. in making that patch of the forest a character. But when we were playing the movie, Guillermo and I sat down on a table like generals, and we had to essentially shoot half of the scene when the sun was setting, and half of the scene when the sun was racing, to keep everything backlit. So everything that you see in the movie was shot, every scene in the forest was shot at the very least over 2 days, 2 afternoons or 2 mornings, because we had to go back to getting the light right. To the point where sometimes we waited for the sun to light a little vial of antibiotics in the hand of the captain. The right way, but right. We went through great effort. I hate shooting in daylight precisely because I'm not in control of the light. So it was a new experience to have to wait for the right time of the day to be backlit by God.
Right.
You know?
I can remember, Guillermo, a long time ago, saying to somebody after I had seen your very first film, at least the one I saw first, which is called Kronos.
Which is the first,
A vampire film. I remember reading something that agreed with what I felt, which is that it felt like a film that had been directed by a 65 or a 75-year-old master, an older man. Like it felt Buñuelian, old Buñuel, because it was very calm and very clear, very clean. It didn't seem anxious, and yet it was extremely gripping, and it was very character-based. And that's what sold me on how that you were a really good director.
I remember when I first met Janet Maslin, which is after she had stepped down from being a critic in the New York Times.
Yes.
I met her and she said, "Oh my God, I thought it would be like 75. I said, "Oh, thank you. I think that in that the movies I do divide neatly into my Ritalin movies, which are Blade and Hellboy and Mimic, and the more sedate ones, which are the others. I think that I enjoy, frankly, working in both rhythms of narrative. But I think that you learn from each movie, but the animus, the animus behind it is constant. You know, and the desire to enthrone the monsters over the humans remains constant.
I know that so much, a lot of your heart and your soul is in the immensely rich imaginings that we've seen in Hellboy and in Blade and in Mimic, and that's, and I've looked at your book, and I know that this is what drives you creatively. But I selfishly hope that you're going to be, I know that you're going to do half of that kind of movie and half more like Pan's Labyrinth. And I would really love to see in your later years, when you get into your 50s or 60s, that you become more of a social realist. Tales that are a bit strange and yet they're very real at the same time. I'm looking forward to really great films from Guillermo del Toro for the next 30 or 40 years. And I hope that...
I would love to, you know, the only thing that I cannot live without is a fantastic, you know.
Yeah, sure.
It has to be either a monster or a clockwork creature or something in the country. No. Listen to me. Up until I was about 10 years old, I truly lived sort of an everyday life full of monsters. And by this, I don't mean just imagining them, but actually having almost lucid dreams at night in which they became real. This paired with the fact that as a Mexican, I have seen my share of weird shit. You know, it really has made me believe in monsters as really tangible, really corporeal entities. To me, monsters are real. And I think that monsters are creatures of the spirit, and they live in a place deep within us where angels and demons live and dwell, and they are part of my particular spiritual life.
Yeah.
As much as a Christian or a Catholic would accept Jesus into his heart.
Sure.
I accept.
The are you, by the way, being are you Catholic? Were you raised a Catholic?
Yeah, I'm lapsed, but I was.
You're lapsed. Okay.
But you know, as they say, once a Catholic, always a Catholic. Yeah. You know. Buñuel had the best way of putting it.
Hmm.
He used to say, I'm an atheist, thank God.
Yeah. I'm a lapsed Episcopalian myself, but...
Oh, my God, my condolences.
So you're going to be kind of just doing the Penn's Labyrinth promotional trail between now and the early part of 07. What is the next film that you're going to make, Guillermo?
I'm doing the second film on Hellboy. And essentially, we already started pre-production.
Okay.
So I'll be busy with that May June, and we'll start May June, and we will be having it ready by 2008.
Okay. When is principal supposed to begin? Sometime in what? March or April?
No, in May June.
Okay.
We will start May June, and we'll finish like November or so.
As I have told you many times, and I'll just say for the purposes of this recording, I think that the ending of Hellboy is one of the most moving and satisfying for me of all films of that genre, because it ends with a beautiful kiss that I really completely believed in. It was really a sublime way to end a film of that sort. And are you going to keep the love story going? Is that going to be part of what the next one is about?
It is for me, because... And to me, it has an essential truth of what man-woman relationships are.
Mm-hmm.
It's about being made of fire and finding a fireproof partner.
That's a good one.
That's what it's all about, man.
All right, man. I'm going to let you go. I know you have to head to San Francisco, and I'm getting cold standing here in the rain. So I've been doing this entire thing, looking at a rainy street with rain coming down on my shoulder. But it's been worth it talking to you, man. You know,
well, I tell you, having an overcast day and a belly full of tacos is the sum up of my existence.
I hope to see you soon. I guess you're going to be. Are you going to be mainly shooting Hellboy in Los Angeles, or where are you actually going to shoot it?
Yeah, no, we're going to shoot in Hungary, in Budapest.
Budapest, got it. Okay.
Yeah. Let's talk when you go back to Los Angeles.
All right, man. That'd be great. And have a good flight, and I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Great Christmas, Jeff. Have a great Christmas.
Merry Christmas.